This is a replay of the Wednesday night, April 12th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, unless sports preempt us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Radio. I'm Raleigh James. You have 3 hours to spend tonight, full show, and then tomorrow night it's somewhat abbreviated. The first hour will be devoted to the last play-by-play of the Blackhawks for the season for us, and after that it's smooth sailing with live shows 3 hours every night when we're on the air, which of course is live Monday through Thursday, and then on Fridays we replay Monday Night Trivia. So once again, if you are listening on Friday, don't call. It doesn't matter how many times I say that, but Friday comes and all of a sudden all the phones are just running. I'm saying, what is going on? And then I don't even finish the sentence where I say, oh, right, Monday Night Trivia on Friday. But on Monday Night Trivia, absolutely call, and next Monday it'll be a full show, I promise. So a number of things in the tabloids, including Hollywood's most bizarre fad diet. So yeah, I'm not at a loss for things to talk about, but we will talk about happiness and memories and actually the synergy between the two, or lack of same. And if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. I prove that just about every night, and I'm going to with Eduardo in Midway. Eduardo, what's up tonight?
Hey, Raleigh. Yeah, hello. How you doing?
All right. How about yourself?
I finally did it this time. Lifelong Chicago resident, and I just signed up today on putting the house on the market, and tomorrow they come and do photos, and then Sunday we're going to do an open house.
So let's talk about it. Lifelong Chicagoan, you own this house, correct?
Yeah, single family by Midway Airport. I've been in this area since 1994.
All right. Did you buy the house personally?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you bought the house as a young man, to say the least. That's why I asked, because that's been going on 30 years now. So almost 30 years ago, you bought the house. What'd you pay?
Well, actually, this house here, I've been here 10 years.
Oh, okay. No, I was talking about the okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, the current house. You've had it 10 years.
I'm 52.
All right. So 10 years.
Yeah,
and,
10, 11 years.
Right. And so you bought it at a pretty good time, I think. What'd you pay?
$220, somewhere around there.
And what are you going to list it for?
$310.
Okay, all right. Well, that's a modest increase, but a nice increase. How much do you have left on the mortgage?
44.
Oh, well, so you're going to make a very nice chunk of change now. So now that you're going to be flush,
and I also have a benefit through the company where I get legal assistance.
Good.
So I got that too.
Good. Well, now you're going to be kind of flush with cash for your next move, and where are you going?
I won't say where, but it's somewhere in Florida.
And all the thing with all this the is, way to Florida. Ooh.
Yeah, the thing with this is I'm not going to be employed with the same company, because they got a thing where you got to work nearby, like Indiana and Wisconsin, and that doesn't
right.
That didn't fly with me, so I didn't like that. That's okay.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested, anyways, to try something else, anyways.
Do you know what you're going to do?
Not right now, no. But I do have a reserve, and you know,
yes,
I'm not going to sit on it like we've been talking in previous shows about why people are, you know, how people are living off without being employed. So I don't want to be one of those statistics.
Okay, so I will not ask you where in Florida, but I will narrow it down to one thing, east or west?
West.
Okay.
It's near Orlando, but it's not in Orlando.
All right, but that's central. That's central. All right. Well, good deal. Certainly booming markets in many ways. Why did you pick it?
The warm weather. I mean, I speak Spanish, so that also might come in handy. I mean, I was going back and forth between that and then Nashville.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, both have pluses.
Tennessee and Florida was at the top of my list.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you can stand the humidity, then the weather is good. It's funny about Florida. Some people say, I'm going to Florida because I love the weather. And other people are saying, I'm leaving Florida because I hate the weather. And it really comes down to how much you're willing to take when you're dealing with humidity. But if you don't mind it, it won't be snowing.
No, I mean, I don't mind. Obviously, I won't be needing winter stuff. So I plan to do a little flea market. There's a flea market thing nearby here.
You'd be surprised.
And I'm gonna go there Saturday.
Don't give up everything, because even though it's not going to snow and you don't need that kind of stuff, the idea that it'll not be cold, that might surprise you. Because I'll tell you, nothing feels colder than 40 degrees with 90% humidity in Florida.
I could keep the jean jacket, you know, some light jacket. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Just prepare that you will have some of those days. I mean, you'll be praying for them come summer, but in winter, you'll have them. So, don't throw everything out. Well, this is very exciting.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand the lure to move to Florida or to Nashville for that reason, but what was it where a lifelong Chicagoan said, I'm getting out of Chicagoland? Was there anything that was causing you to want to leave, or was it all that you were looking forward to being somewhere else?
Yeah, I would say that now, even though this neighborhood is a police, city worker, fire neighborhood, so there was a little extra protection from crime, but that was on top, and also property taxes.
Well, I can understand that. Yeah, some of the property taxes just blow me away. Florida is not the cheapest in property tax, of course, because they don't have state income tax. And Tennessee,
that's
true too as well, at least not on earned income. Tennessee does have tax on unearned income, but for most people that is not applicable, but doesn't have tax on wages or anything like that. Well, it's all very exciting. When are you making the move?
As soon as I get this sale taken care of over here, then it's a green light to go over there. So.
Well, that'll probably be on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I mean, houses are selling very quickly, and yours sounds definitely affordably priced.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I asked the agents, are they doing multiple offers? Not really, but she did say when the pandemic was going around, kind of like in that area.
Sure.
Then it was, that was kind of hot, but it's not so much right now with multiple. That's kind of cooled down.
Well, you'll see. You'll be surprised, because it sounds like you're at a good price point. And especially as interest rates rise, that price point becomes more important to the buyer. So it all sounds good to me. Well, the good news is you can still be listening to WGN in Florida.
Oh, yeah. And I'll give out more details, in the coming week, see how I'm progressing as far as, I'm moving to the next step.
I'll be curious, because, of course, they'll come by and they'll want to, kind of set the stage for the house. What changes they want to make that they think is going to lure the buyer?
Yeah, I mean, my place is pretty good condition. I mean, I don't think there'll be any complaints.
Yeah, no. So, very often they stage it, they sometimes rearrange furniture or whatever, or things of that nature. So I'll be curious.
Yeah, I got a little coaching from the agent because, you want to and they give you a list of, you know, pretty basic stuff you should be able to do.
What's on the list?
Well, I mean, obviously, being you want to be clean, you want to have things out of the doorway, curtains.
What about curtains?
Well, you want to make sure that they're not like dirty or
All that. You're right, exactly. I was just curious because I've known people who've sold their houses and agents have told them things like, "You've got to change your kitchen wallpaper," and things like that. I'm like, "Wait a minute, let the new owner change the kitchen wallpaper."
So.
Well, this will be interesting.
The radon, that they went over the radon, the lead paint, they went over those too.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, well, that of course, kind of the legalese, and that'll all be fine because
you
bought it 10 years ago, and so they went through that when you bought it. So you're clear on that. Now, if you owned it for 65 years, I'd be saying, I don't know, but I'm sure it passed all those tests when you bought it.
That would be, suspect, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But this is good. All right. Well, exciting, exciting. Are you moving alone, or do you have family, friends going with you? How is this?
No. Well, there's... I have a mom because, you know, I told you previously I live with mom and I take care of her. So she's
going.
Coming along. My younger brother, he's not interested, but he'll stick around here.
Okay.
Maybe he'll join us later. Who knows?
Is mom up for the trip? Is she looking forward to it or is she going grudgingly?
She wasn't too hot at it at the beginning, but she's kind of coming around.
Yeah, I know. You know, that's the thing. Mom's a little older, and she's set in her ways, and she's got her friends, and she's like, get out of town. I am not leaving. But obviously, she is. So this will be very interesting.
Yeah, because I don't want her, like, I never was a fan of leaving people in these, like, institutions.
Oh, God, no.
Because I always hear bad stories.
Yeah, no.
Even some of my old TV series, you always see one about an episode on bad, corrupt institutions.
Oh, yeah.
I would see that in those TV series.
Well, even the best of them doesn't equal what it's like being at home, your home, with family. So that's great.
Right.
That's great. Well, keep me posted. I want to know all about it.
Yeah. Hey, before I go, I wanted to tell you, because they were talking about this on LS89 about 99 years and the memories. Obviously, animal stories with Larry Lujak, that was the best. What was your...
Oh, yeah.
You remember on that.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Larry Lujak all the way around, going back to when he was in Spokane.
Tommy Edwards, yeah.
Yeah, sure. So all of that bit did very well. And, I thought Lujak was a kick. And I had talked to him a few months before he died. And, you know, he'd always been a dyed-in-the-wool liberal, just absolutely. And he was living in New Mexico at the time and had some run-ins with health care. And he said, I think I'm changing my ways. So I thought, yeah, boy, enough of those experiences. You betcha you are. So I thought Lujak was a terrific jock. When he was on KNEW in Spokane, which became KJRB later, he got fired because there was a Volkswagen commercial and he played underneath it the Sieg Heil speeches from Hitler. Oh, God. And that was the end of Larry. And I thought, all right, he's my man. This is hilarious. So, he did very well. So
never heard that one.
For a guy who wanted to be a park ranger, he had a hell of a radio career. That's a true story.
So I didn't know, but Tommy Edwards, and I guess he worked in the Pentagon. They were interviewing from L.A.
Well,
and he used to work in the Pentagon. I didn't know that.
I didn't either, but I don't know Tommy.
Yeah.
I mean, I know who he is, obviously, but I don't know him personally, so I don't have, I know he was on LS and on CFL and on KQX, and of course, like you mentioned, Animal Stories and all that, and if you listen to Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll, he was the first stadium announcer to ever play that record, and of course, that became a huge sports anthem, so I know those things about him, and I know when he went to KCBS after ODS in Boston, but I don't know him, so I have absolutely no idea. I assume that he has stayed in the L.A. area because his kids are out there, I think. So there again, family. So yeah. But I think he's been off the air for, gosh, it's going on almost 10 years now.
Yeah, he said he was helping out some of the stations over there in L.A.
First time,
whenever I interviewed him this morning.
First time I ever heard him, he was working for Harry Averill at Weem in Washington, D.C., and it was before ORFM, and Weem was, in spite of itself, an amazing little radio station. So, yeah, he had a great career and called his own shots, and good for him.
Yeah. Well, thank you for telling me that. Yeah. Okay. All right. Going to get off and get on with the rest of the show.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
More details to come later on.
All right. Good deal. Yeah. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. We'll talk to Barry. Barry's in New Hampshire. There's room for you too. And I had promised a couple requests, and so we'll get to them early on in the show. Although last night I played a couple requests early on in the show, and John didn't hear them. Yeah, that's right. John had called in the night before and didn't hear them. But Sam and Gurney wanted Steven Sanchez. Oh, brother. But yeah, for Sam, I'll do it. And that actually was a country hit, so we'll do that, and then we'll have some Fibro Owls and other stuff coming up on WGN Radio.
Georgia ran me out of my home,
proving that, hey, I love my callers. Yeah, I wouldn't play that on my own, that's for damn sure. But it was a hit, and that's Steven Sanchez, Until I Found You. Got to, I don't know, mid-20s on the country charts last year, actually. And, yeah, I can't tell you any more than that, except Steven Sanchez is moved to Nashville and trying to do a country career, and, well, at least Sam and Gurney loved him. So there you have it, 888-876-5593. And Barry is in New Hampshire. So, Barry, what's up?
Hey, Raleigh. But I wanted to know if you could tell me the life and times of Sam Cooke. XS TV was playing B-sides that became the hits, like, and The Changes Coming was one of the songs, which I if you can play that for me, I'd appreciate it. Mm-hmm. It was a flip side of Shake, I believe.
No, I'm well aware. And I did promise that one night I would do a whole thing on Sam Cooke, and it was interesting, of course, because he started out in gospel. And, yes, where his father wanted him to stay. But more to the point, that's where Art Rupp at Specialty Records wanted him to stay. And, in fact, when Bumps Blackwell brought Art Rupp, You Send Me, he just basically threw him out of the office and said, that's secular music, and we're never going to do that. And he took it over to Bob Keane. And Bob Keane said, I'll put it out right now. And, of course, that was Sam's first secular hit. But Sam was a threat to a lot of people. But a change is going to come, you betcha. Hang on, don't go away. Be happy to play that. And so many good Sam Cooke records. Although I will say, I don't think anything will ever top You Send Me. That is the absolute best. All right, so if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. But we'll find out what's going on in the world at large right now in the WGN Radio Newsroom on WGN Radio.
I was born tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know
the radio. I'm Raleigh James, and there it is.
Change gonna come.
And I'd argue that record probably would have remained a flip side and never had become a hit had it not been for timing. Because, of course, it hit the charts less than a month after the shocking news that Sam Cooke had been murdered. And I do consider it a murder. The information, of course, in terms of precisely what went down will never be known. But the official story, the technical term, it reeks. All right, so we're talking to Barry in New Hampshire about that. I should say, I mentioned Art Rupe had a fit about him doing secular music, and that's not entirely true. Specialty was an interesting label, a lot of gospel history, but it also was home to people like Little Richard. And so when it came to Art talking about maybe one of his stars, and of course Sam Cooke was the lead singer for the Soul Stirrers, and they were selling a lot of specialty records, going secular, at first, of course, he wasn't thrilled, but then he kind of cottoned to it. He thought, well, all right, but in his mind, Sam Cooke was going to sing rock and roll like Little Richard. So when he walked into the studio and Sam Cooke was singing a George Gershwin song, he lost it. And that's when Bumps Blackwell and Sam left. And, of course, later, Art Rupe got to see just how big Yosemite was going to be. So that was the beginning. But, he was a threat. He was a good-looking guy. He had a good business sense. He had his own record label. And, he was on a major label. There were people who, RCA, there were people who weren't very happy about this, to say the least. And then the incident happened. And of course, that incident, like I say, it was Christmas of 1964, and allegedly at the Hacienda Motel, he came at the woman who was the desk clerk, and she killed him. Well, there's clearly more to that story, but we're never going to know it. So, questions?
I didn't know he got killed in a hotel. I just didn't know what the story was.
It's down there on Figueroa Street. It was the hotel, the Hacienda Motel, and it's in South Central, right on Figueroa. And when the police were called, they were answering a call for a shooting and kidnapping. And it was claimed that he had kidnapped this woman and taken to her the motel. The problem is, earlier in the night, he'd been at Martoni's, which was my all-time favorite Italian restaurant, but I digress. In any event, he was seen with her, and unwilling would not be a word you'd use. She was clearly not kidnapped, for one thing. But another thing is, some of the staff there swore to it that Sam was flush with cash. Now, the interesting part of that story is the cash was never found, not on the girl who claimed she'd been kidnapped, and not on on Sam. It just disappeared. So we'll never know. So the motel manager had a story. And what happened was, she was on the phone with the motel owner. and the motel owner corroborated what the manager had said, that Sam Cooke had been banging on the door of her office nude, shouting, "Where's the girl?" And what you can hear, actually, in terms of, well, you won't hear it, but by all accounts, was when Cooke was first shot, his reaction was just absolute utter shock, like, "Lady, you shot me," you know, and it was, mm-hmm. it wasn't a guy who was angry, he was just perplexed. And so, in any event, he allegedly came at her again, and that's when she hit him over the head with a broomstick, and he fell to the floor and died. And so there was an inquest, but like I say, because the hotel owner backed up the manager's story, and then the girl who allegedly was kidnapped, who had first run to the manager's door looking for help, she said that the manager had taken too long to respond, so she fled the motel before the manager opened the door, and supposedly she had his clothes, and she's the one who went to the telephone and called the cops. But, you know, again, there are so many inconsistencies in all these stories and in what people saw earlier in the evening at Martoni's that there wouldn't be anything that would be slam dunk. But the jury, you know, the grand jury, the coroner's jury ultimately accepted it, and it was called a justifiable homicide, and the case was closed.
Oh, boy.
But, you know,
how many hits did he hit?
Oh, he had a lot of hits. But there's another thing, too. You know, I mean, there's no doubt about it that he was a womanizer, and he had out of wedlock children and things like that. But to me, if you're looking for dirt, the piece de resistance in him was right. 3 months after he died, his wife married one of the Womacks. And then it gets even more interesting. I'll see if I can remember this right. The second wife is Barbara Campbell. And in fact, I think they got married in Chicago, actually, and had three kids. But like I say, before 3 months after his death, she married Bobby Womack. Now, Womack and her divorced after she discovered that Womack was having an affair with Cook's 17-year-old daughter, Linda. So Linda, meanwhile, marries Womack's brother, Cecil, and they were the duo of Womack and Womack. And so, you know, you look at this and you say, I need a Venn diagram for this. But nonetheless, there were, you know, and while there were all those colorful stories and everybody had Sam Cooke stories, the reality is he was absolutely a threat to the establishment, because here was a very good looking, very well spoken, a very business oriented black man who was having hits that a lot of white people were buying at a time when there were some people who didn't like that. Now, there's another speculation as well, and I have no proof on any of this, but I've never been a fan of Alan Klein, manager who was involved with, you know, the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and all that, but also bought Cameo Parkway and held back those masters that I've talked about, which was so terrible. But in any event, he was managing Sam Cooke at the time, and he owned the rights to Cooke's recordings. And so there were a number of people who said, follow the money, and Alan B. Klein's in this. But again, there's absolutely no hardcore evidence, just a lot of talk. So I can't tell you, but there's no shortage of conspiracies. And the good news is we're left with the music, and just some great music. And, you know, some of it just wonderfully soulful and, you know, like Change Is Gonna Come, or just standards like You Send Me, I think one of the greatest records of all time. But also a lot of fun stuff like Cousin of Mine. Right. Another Saturday Night. I Ain't Got Nobody. And yeah, Twist. In the Night Away, or Good Time. So there were, as far as chart records, he probably had 36, but I would say that half a dozen were posthumous, at least.
Now, did he do You Send Me?
Oh, You Send Me was the big record. That was the first one, and that was on Keen, and that was number one for at least 6 weeks on the R&B charts, and number one for 3 weeks on the pop charts. And the flip side of the original was the Summertime, which was the record that Art Rupe just went nuts when he heard, "You're doing George Gershwin, this will never work," and all this. Yeah, well, so That was the deal. But of course, the minute that You Send Me hit the top of the charts, Art Roop said, well, what do we have in the vault? You know, and that's why I'll Come Running Back to You was on Specialty. And that was recorded prior. And so Art Roop, you know, rushed that out. And then there were several other Keane records that came. And ultimately, he went to RCA in 1960 because they had all the distribution and all the things that that Keane never would have had. So,
well, thank you that you gave me the information I was asking for.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure there's a lot more to this story we could share some night. I've always said we'd do a Sam Cooke segment because there's so much to say about Sam. But ultimately, I would say that he's dead because he was a threat to the wrong people. Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So, yeah, and of course, I wasn't there. Certainly drove by the Hacienda Motel many a night, but no, I have no idea. And again, the Alan B. Klein allegations, and of course, he's no longer with us either, but are just that. There's no proof. I think the only thing that most of us conclude who have looked into this to any degree is that the official story is just, well, the technical term is, it's a crock. Yeah, all right. But we were left with the music, and you can't tell me that You Send Me isn't one of just the greatest of all times in terms of classics, just classic soul records. And not only soul, you know, pop standard, everything. It's just wonderful. And it's one of those records that, you know, almost everybody who's done it did it justice to one degree or another. I love the Richard Nipples Fields version. Of course I would. But that said. Yeah, well, if you're listening to my show, I'll tell you what said. You are a radio fan, and that is for sure. So you probably know all about the Sea Crane Company, and I'm probably preaching to the choir. But if for some reason you don't, or if you're looking for that perfect radio, do I have an answer for you? Years ago, Bob Crane was just beside himself with how bad reception was on the current radios being produced, still true to this day, that he determined that he was going to make radios that had just great reception, like the radios of yesteryear. And he did. And there's a number of them, some of them with just the best features. And I really like the CCEP Pro. I keep it in the kitchen. I love this radio. And I keep one in the bathroom at the Globe House. And adore this because it's slide rule dial tuning, you know, the simplicity of needle and dial where you just, you know, dial it in yourself. And I love it. It's got a button for power and a button for a bright light display. And that's pretty much it for buttons. It's got no clock. It's got no alarm. It does have a tone switch and bass and treble control, so you can make it sound just how you want to make it sound. But in addition to how much fun it is to fine tune, it has the twin coil ferrite antenna, which makes AM listening a pleasure. Yeah, you will pick up more with this than any other radio that's on the market today, except some of Bob's other radios, which are equally good at this. It's got a great FM FM receptivity as well. It's got a line-in jack, so you can connect a smartphone or whatever you want to hear with a good quality speaker, because there's a nice speaker in it. You'll hear voice clarity just perfectly. You can read all about it, ccradio.com, ccradio.com. It's also very affordable. The EP Pro, yeah, throwback to yesteryear, great reception and ease of use. You'll never have to look at a manual, that's for sure. CCRadio.com. Now, if you can't go online, 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. They're there 24 hours a day. They got great customer service, and you're really talking to them. Now, of course, if you need immediate shipping, you can go to Amazon or BuyMart or things like that. But if you want the real deal experience, go to CCRadio.com. Yeah, look at the EP Pro and everything else, a wonderful catalog. And you tell them that Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Right around the corner, that's where my baby stays.
That's where my baby stays.
Right around the corner, that's where my baby stays. And I can get to my honey's house 15 different ways.
Yucky, ooh-ah, yucky, yucky, ooh-ah.
Well, I can go around the side, I can cut through the back. I broke a picket off the fence so I can squeeze through the crack. Right around the corner, that's where my baby stays. Right around the corner, that's where my baby stays. And I can get to my honey's house 15 different ways.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and well, Stephanie and Madison likes the Five Royales, and right around the corner, 1956, and that was on King. Yeah, they recorded a lot of stuff, not that much chart stuff, but of course, Loman Pauling, the original, dedicated to the one I love, gotta love that, and so much more. So yeah, Think, what a great record that was. That was on King. So, but right around the corner, don't get many requests for that, but happy to play it. All right, we've got Johnny D, and he is in Youngstown as always. So, Johnny D, what's up?
Hey, Raleigh, how you doing?
Can't complain. How about your bad self?
Well, any better, I'd start walking on water.
All right.
I was listening, and I was hearing you. Well, firstly, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Did you get any emails or texts from me?
Well, I think you might have sent a text, but if you don't, I think I've explained this. I don't have any texting capabilities whatsoever. I will be notified if there are texts, but if there are attachments or anything like that, they're never forwarded.
So, okay, never
yeah, because it's not a cell phone, right? It's not a
remember
cell phone.
Remember on Saturday Night Live? Remember that?
What? No, I saw Saturday
Night
Live.
Watch the TV.
I watched it the first
girl,
show it came out.
There was that one girl, I forget her name, but this is probably back in the 70s, 80s, and she used to confuse words, you know.
Yeah.
And I forget. It was like, I can't even think of one, you know. But then she goes, what about this hair dryer, you know?
Oh,
guy would say, you know what I'm saying?
Roseanne Rosanna Dana,
the girl that played her, okay?
Yeah, married to
Gene Wilder.
Yeah, she's married to Gene Wilder. Gilda Radner was her
What's
name.
That girl's name? I thought she died.
Well, she did, and she was married to Gene Wilder at the time. Gilda Radner was her name.
Gilda Radner, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, so anyhow, whoever the news guy, like Chevy Chase or someone was saying, mm-hmm. Well, it's not hair dryer, it's hair or something or other. And then she go, oh, never mind.
No.
Yeah. It was funny. But anyhow, so never mind about that text and reading, but anyhow.
Well, no, wait a minute. I'm glad you brought this up, because not only for you, but for anybody listening. It's not a cell number. It doesn't take texts or messages or anything like that. I do have a program that will let me know if a text came in, and it will give me, like, the first few lines and the phone number, but it won't give me a whole message, and it will not forward an attachment, so you can't use texts. Email is the only way to go, and that's Raleigh@Raleigh.net. Raleigh@Raleigh.net. But I don't have texts. There you go.
Well, I sent you a couple of emails, too, from Greece, New York, over there in Rochester.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully I'll get to them. Remember, my life is a little convoluted at this point in terms of trying to juggle everything I'm doing. And so I'd say if you're looking at email, don't expect me to see it for a week or so.
Okay, Raleigh. I know. You got a lot going on, so I forgive you.
Yeah, well, thanks.
But what am I doing here? What am I doing? Sam Cooke.
All right.
I want to talk about this,
but I want you to hang on through the news, and we will talk about Sam Cooke. I want to hear your take on it, too. All that and more coming up next hour here on WGN Radio.
Darling, don't ever leave me. Don't say goodbye. I'll do anything you say. I walk a million miles every day. I swear I'm so in love. Don't you leave me, darling. No.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, it wasn't a request and it didn't have anything to do with this day in history, but see, what happened was I was thinking about Art Roop and Specialty Records since we were talking about Sam Cooke and all, and I was thinking, you know, Don and Dewey used to be on Specialty, but then again, they were on Highland in the early 60s, and they had that great record that the Blossoms backed him on, and I thought, I'm going to play that. So that's Don't Ever Leave Me, Don and Dewey on Highland, 1962, and that was the Blossoms behind him, which, of course, Darlene Love and everybody else. So 888-876-5593. And we're talking to Johnny D, who wanted to talk about Sam Cooke. Well, the floor is yours.
Yeah, okay, Raleigh. I want to say this. I'm listening to the WGN app.
Okay. All righty.
I'm not listening to your stream because your stream, I kept losing, kept buffering. Or I don't know. But anyhow, so I went to the WGN app. Now, am I supposed to be hearing you and the fella that's in the control room saying,
no.
30, 30.
No.
Here you go.
No, you're not.
Well, I'm hearing it on the WGN app.
I don't know what to tell you. You're not. You're hearing it because you're on hold, and you're hearing it through the telephone. You're not hearing it from WGN.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it's because you're on hold.
I thought I heard it before.
No, you're not hearing it on WGN. The only place you get the behind-the-scenes stuff is if you're listening directly to my stream or if you're on hold to talk to me. Then you hear anything. But otherwise, no. When you listen to WGN, it sounds like a professional real radio station, which they are.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right, I was there. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Just wanted to say that. Okay, thanks for straightening me out on that.
All right. About Sam Cooke.
I like the way you scolded that guy last night. I was listening.
No, that was unfortunate. And, you know, again, we're not here to in any way defame companies. You know, that's just wrong. So, okay, go right ahead.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
Now, all right. I watched... And I know you don't watch too many things on a visual, you know, on the visual way. But anyhow, on Netflix, I watched this show. It was called either The Double Murder of Sam Cooke or The Double Killing, something like that.
Hmm.
The two-time killing of Sam Cooke, okay?
Yeah, The Two Killings of Sam Cooke. This is a couple years old.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, 2019.
I don't know. I don't search around for things. It's just
2019.
Popped up on my Netflix. Huh?
It came out in 2019 on Netflix.
Oh, okay. Well, then in that.
Yes.
In that show, since you were talking about it with the other fella, you know, at the beginning of the show, and then you said that... What was the name of that restaurant he was in?
Martoni's. M-A-R-T-O-N-I apostrophe S. No longer there, but it was my favorite.
Yeah, how was the veal?
Well, the veal was fine, but I'll tell you, I probably ate there a couple times a week for 20 years, so I ate there a lot.
Yeah, what were some of the dishes?
Well, you know, basically I'm just going to eat pasta, tons of bread, and I'm happy, you know. It's that simple.
And you're so thin. How'd you do that?
I don't know, because it's the only thing I ate all day. Ziti, really nice ziti. Just great marinara sauce. I just loved it.
Okay. You didn't sprinkle any red crushed pepper on there,
no,
did you?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Okay, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
No Parmesan cheese,
yes,
like that.
Plenty of that, but, you know, the ziti was baked, so, of course, you know, there was cheese to begin with.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anyhow, now getting back. So what they said in that show, that Sam Cooke was flashing around a big wad of money in that restaurant.
Well, yeah, and that was, again, I brought that up, that there were people in the restaurant who claimed that he had money, but that money absolutely was not found.
Right, because in that show they said that the girl threw his pants out the window.
Right, right.
And they were suspecting that there was somebody else in on this.
Yeah,
they grabbed their pants and ran away.
Could be anything. You see, that there are so many theories about this that you can take your conspiracy of choice in this.
Now, all right, here's my conspiracy thinking from what I've seen on that show. I just want to see what you think of, you know, maybe if you're thinking of this, I don't know. But they said in that show that he started his own record label.
Yeah, SAR. I mentioned that. SAR. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And that, let's say the mob, okay, approached him and wanted in on that.
Yeah.
Or something.
Well, again, I'm telling you, all those things are some of the theories that are out there, and no one will ever know which one, if any of them, is accurate.
Okay. And then this this woman that he supposedly kidnapped, she was a prostitute to work for them.
Well, you know, again, alleged.
Alleged. Well, let me ask you this. Was she like an Asian woman, an Oriental-looking woman?
That I don't know.
Well, that is what they showed on the TV.
Well, that may be, but again,
as a matter of fact, they had actual video of the trial.
That may be, but I don't really know what anybody looks like with any type of real assurance. So whatever she looks like, she looks like. I don't know. And
she looked Oriental to me, Asian.
Would that matter?
Yeah.
Would that matter?
No, because not for the purpose he was going to do.
Well,
doesn't matter.
So anyway, as I say, it is going on 60 years since that murder, 58 to be exact, and we'll never know.
And wasn't there some kind of executive guy? He had a Jewish sounding name, I think.
Well, if you're talking his manager, Alan Klein, of course, wound up with the rights to the
he was a lawyer or something.
Yeah, Alan Klein, right, the guy who was later involved with the Beatles and with the Rolling Stones and who had Abco Records, and he's the guy who stopped when he owned Cameo Parkway, wouldn't license for commercial use and all that stuff. So, yeah, but Alan B. Klein, of course.
He really messed with a lot of people, didn't he?
Well, you know, again, it's all interesting, but nothing in it was unique information or things that we weren't aware. I'm just saying
that. You mean
that,
in that show?
Yeah, in any of these things. I mean, we know there's a good half a dozen potentials and probably a dozen more that we don't know. I mean, you can get to everything from, again, you know, he was a bon vivant. He was a man about town. He was a womanizer. So you can go right to the heart of personal. You can go right to the heart of business. You can go right to the heart of racial tension. And there were a lot of things that that checked that box. Again, a good-looking African-American who had great business sense and charm and all that, and crooning the stuff he was crooning, well, that would make some people unhappy. So, you can bring in the mob to that. I can go on and on and on, but we don't know.
Yeah. Well, in that show, they showed Cassius Clay, I guess that's
right,
going by his casket, you know, and looking how they had it lying in state, or however what do you call it.
Yeah. And many people thought it was because of his outspoken views. And you hear that on A Change Is Going to Come. But, of course, Sam Cooke was very aware of what was going on and had a lot to say. So you can add that to the mix, too, if you want.
Yeah, well, that was what they were getting at.
Right, well, of course.
Show, that Change Is Going to Come.
Right, none of that.
Because he went on the Chitlin' Circuit.
Well, right. Well, you know, remember his background, and you're talking the years, of course, and absolutely he evolved and on so many ways. So while it's interesting, none of these documentaries bring anything new to light. I think everything possible has already been raised, but the bottom line is now, almost 60 years later, we don't know. All I know for sure,
Cassius Clay said, after that killing of him, he said, if this was Elvis Presley, you'd have the FBI,
right,
the CIA,
yes,
every other
and that's absolutely
agency
true.
Looking into it.
Right, right. And that was part of the racial aspect. And of course that's true. There's no doubt about it. But that was at the time, even at the time, this smelled. So I think the only thing that we can take to the bank about Sam Cooke is the official story is just a crock. I don't buy that it happened that way, but I also think that there was nothing that ever came to light that proved it didn't, and there was nothing that ever proved beyond a reasonable doubt any of the conspiracies that we've all heard. And I think if you sat down, you can probably come up with a dozen different ones.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I got out of that answers was that Sam Cooke could sing.
Well, of course he could. And there was no doubt about that. And that was true with the Soul Stirrers. And originally, when he first went away from the Soul Stirrers to record secular music, before he made the change, he did things under different names. Like one of them was Dale Cook. And they didn't hit. But it was obvious he could sing. But how Art Rupe didn't think You Send Me was going to be a smash is beyond me.
Yeah, that's a good song.
It is a wonderful song, and he wrote it.
We were talking over there about all that. I was thinking of when Cassius Clay beat Sonny Liston to win the heavyweight title back in, when was it, 63, something like that?
I think 62, but I don't remember.
He beat Sonny Liston, and you know, that's when he was saying, I shook up the world, I shocked the world with it.
Yeah, 64.
And
that was,
he said, there's Sam Cooke, he's the greatest singer in the world, bring him up in the ring,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was 64.
64, and then, well, let's see,
and that actually took place in Miami Beach.
I was in the sixth grade.
Well, that's very nice.
That's
perfect.
Wow. I'm just a puppy, Sorrell.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
I'm just a puppy.
So, but...
Now, wait a minute. So, anyhow, I was going to say something off of that. And then, so I seen something else by Bill O'Reilly. Okay? You know Bill O'Reilly, the news guy?
Yes, understood, yes.
Yeah. And he wrote books, Killing This, Killing the Pope, Killing the Mob, okay? And in that, he said that fight was fixed when Cassius Clay beat Sonny Liston the first time, and then it was fixed the second time, too. That's what he said.
There were a number of people who said that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, me as a kid, I'm thinking, all right, I knew Cassius Clay was going to beat the bear. They call him the bear. But Sonny Liston was a bad man, you know, so I don't know.
Well,
all right.
And, you know,
thanks for the information, Rolly.
The rematch, by the way, is the one that was up in Lewiston, Maine. That really created the sentiment. The fight,
you mean, the phantom punch?
Yeah, that the fight was fixed. And of course, if that's a conspiracy you like, you can get it. You can also read the reports of the FBI suspecting that the 64 bout was rigged.
Well, the mob made money by doing it that way.
They're not the only ones.
See, Sonny Liston. Yes. Sonny Liston was worked for them.
No, I understand. Supposedly, Ash Resnick set up the fix. So, anyway, you can read all about it.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Nice talking to you, Raleigh. Enjoy the show. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yes. Ash Resnick. I hadn't thought about that name in years. And, if you spend time in Las Vegas or, to an extent, Miami Beach, you probably would know that name. Yeah, Ash Resnick used to stay at the Fountain Blue. All right, well, yeah, what can I tell you? We won't go down memory lane on that. 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, I got John and coming to Rosie in Sturtevant, Wisconsin, has another request. We played her Always last night. We'll see. Paul is in Iroquois County, so there's a line available for you, too, if you want it. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Well, baby, now we'll travel. Say, I have a love. Yeah, I will travel. And I say, if you need a loving man, we'll travel. Say, I'm a travel from Maine to Mexico. I tried to find the girl to love me so. No matter where I go, find the girl to satisfy me. Have love.
Well, baby, now we'll travel. Say,
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 1960 on Flip Records. We had a fur tags on that. And a little Hollywood label that actually had the original Louie Louie. And Richard Berry, who wrote and recorded that, also recorded in 1960. Have Love, Will Travel. And he would have turned 88 yesterday. Born in Louisiana, but raised in Los Angeles, and had Jefferson High, like so many people. But it was years and years and years before he got the royalties back on Louie Louie. And there are some who say, well, he never should have gotten it back. I sold it for like $10 or something. Not a lot more, but in any event, the courts finally ruled that, yeah, you're entitled to some of this. And so he got something before he died in 1997. Yeah, 1997, right, in Inglewood, which is a suburb of Los Angeles. So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh and Rosie in Sturtevant has another request. So hello, Rosie. Did you hear You're Always Yesterday? Rosie left us. All right, well, good night, Rosie. All right, I hope she heard her. I hope she heard her always, but she didn't hang around. But I bet you John in Covington did. All right, John, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. I find myself sometimes listening to WBAI, and they have some really, let's just put it this way, avant-garde, off the wall, if you will. And it holds my interest enough. And then I'll give you an example. They have one woman on tonight, or not tonight, well, kind of like twilight time.
Here, hang on.
Anyway.
Don't go away. We're going to leave you and the friends at WBAI right there. Stay right where you are. We're going to find out what's going on in the world at large and be right back to it on WGN Radio.
Take my lips and kiss them.
Take my love.
Take my hands and hold them. I am yours, my love, till the end of time.
Take
my arms, let them hold you.
Take
my eyes, let them show you. I am yours, my love, till the end of time. Till the end.
Flamingo is probably my favorite Flamingo record, and it was a flip side, 1960 on end. The A side was All Night, but Mio Amore was the one that did it for me. And of course, Nate Nelson, lead singer, and he would have been 91 this week. Born in Chicago in 1932 and did lead for the Flamingos between 54 and 62. Then he was with the Platters. In fact, he was with the Platters during all their MusiCorps hits like Love You 1,000 Times and Washed Ashore with This Ring, all that. And but the time that he was singing with the Platters on those great little beach records, he started having heart attacks. And he went on a waiting list for heart transplant. In fact, his wife had called a news conference in 1984 asking for help finding a heart donor, and the very next day he died, June 1st, 1984, in Boston, just 52 years old. But he left us Mio More and many, many others. All right, we're going to get back to John in Covington in a moment. However, I defer to first-time callers, and Dave is one of them. So, Dave, in Forest City, Iowa, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Larry.
What's
so,
up?
I had a very specific question about cover records, and Don McLean had explained on Twitter that a cover recording was when a record company had wanted to make a white recording of a black record.
Not only, like, I know exactly, like the Crew Cuts doing the chord Shaboom, or Pat Boone doing Fats Domino, or Little Richard, but cover records are not only racial. Cover records,
well,
by any means.
Don McLean took issue with that, and he argued that that was when, at the time they started using the word cover records, it meant a black version of a white.
It didn't.
I mean,
though.
A white
he
version.
He can think that all he wants, but I would disagree with it. It certainly did mean that in that context, but it was not exclusive to that context by any means.
Okay.
And, cover records are very common, and often the cover becomes the big hit. And I'm not talking about the racial situation, but I'll give you one in the 60s. You probably remember Midnight Confessions, The Grassroots, big record, right?
Right.
Well, they didn't do it originally. The Evergreen Blues did it originally 6 months earlier on Mercury. And,
I didn't know that.
Well, I can give you story after story like that. See,
Weiss recorded Rhinestone Cowboy, and then Glenn Campbell made a recording of it.
You have that everywhere. That's fairly common. Remember, if you're a songwriter, you've got a music publisher, and that music publisher's job is to get people to record your song. Now, as a songwriter, the very first version of the recording, before no one else has recorded it, the very first one, you're allowed to determine who that goes to. But once there is...
Really?
Yes. But it's exclusive to that point. But once there is one version of it, then it's fair game. Anyone can record it on the planet. You can't do a thing about it. Now, you'll get your royalties, but for a publisher, the publisher wants to have a hit, obviously. So he's going...
Well, John Fogerty says he didn't get his royalties.
Well, and he didn't get his royalties from the record company. He would have gotten his writing royalties, because they didn't come from the record company. The writing royalties come from the performing rights societies, such as ASCAP or BMI. So that's a different situation. As far as record royalties, my God, well, that's it's strange when they do get them, but that's a different thing entirely. But to say that cover records were exclusively a way to get white music played of black artists, it's just not true. As a publisher, you want to have a hit. You want anybody to record it who will record it. And it's very common that that a record will have three or four people before the guy has it with a hit. Now, the other thing that I'll take issue with, a lot of people thought that cover records were inherently racist. So I want to talk about that for a second here, because most people use Pat Boone as the example. All right. Because of, like, Ain't That a Shame, the Fats Domino record, you know, things like that. All right.
And
by the way, I hated all those records when Pat Boone did them, but that's not the point. All right. There was a guy named Randy Wood, and Randy Wood had a little record store in Gallatin, Tennessee, Randy's Record Shop. And he sponsored the overnight R&B shows on WLAC. So Gene Nobles and Hoss Allen and John Ara. This was all sponsored by Randy's Record Shop and a couple other places too. But anyhow, he recognized that there was no way that full service radio stations were going to play these quote unquote race records during the day. They were hidden in the dark of night. So what he did with Dot, and he started Dot Records, he went out and found the cleanest cut, you know, white bread boy he could find, which was Pat Boone right out of Belmont College, and he signed him up. And what he did was all those R&B records he was selling at night, he had Pat Boone record them so he could get them played in the day. And so to say he was a racist, if there was no Randy Wood, arguably there would have been no John Ara and all the wonderful stuff you heard on WLAC. So
you're saying Pat Boone's started in Nashville at Belmont College?
I didn't know that. Pat Boone was from Nashville. His he married Red Foley's daughter? Big country singer.
Okay.
So Shirley. He was from Nashville, but he was a kid just out of college, and Randy Wood immediately saw, oh, this is the way I can get that stuff I'm sponsoring at night. I can get that on stations in the day. So anybody who would say that he was a racist, hell no. Originally, that little record shop in Gallatin was an appliance store, and he was just had a rack of records, but those the mail order that he was doing on WLAC, he sold so many damn records that he was a record man. And yes, he started Dot and Ran Wood and other things. So that's sort of the history of cover. Now, interestingly, most of the time, those cover records, not all, but most of the time, the cover records were written by the black performers. So they got writer's royalty, unless they were dealing with a label that was just as deceitful as hell, like Art Rupin Specialty. It took Little Richard forever to get those royalties, but those royalties were paid. So bottom line is a lot of those singers laughed all the way to the bank. You know, they were not crying that these records were covered. In fact, I remember one time Little Richard just looked at someone like they were plumb crazy. What do you mean did I not like it? That's how I made the money. You know, so, there's definitely another side to that. So now you know a little more about covers and a little more about the racial quotient, which is not a big part of it.
I like Don McLean's. I'm disappointed if he's a liar, but
he's not a liar. That's his take. I don't know where Don McLean was when this stuff was going on. That's his take, and he's entitled to it, but it just history does not reflect it. I would never call him a liar. Yeah, he's a guy who was a kid when this was going on, because I think he was born in like 45. So at the height of this, he was 12 years old, 11 years old. So these are the stories he heard, and this is what he believes, and he's entitled to that. But if you really look at the history of it, it's not that.
Well, thank you for clearing that up.
I'm glad you called. I hope you will again.
I will.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. And of course, Don McLean was absolutely one of the luckiest guys on earth. I guarantee you he didn't think that American Pie was going to be what American Pie turned out to be. And of course, you can read a lot of it now, how he came to write it and what does it really mean and all that, if that song interests you. But sure, I'm sure that he saw it that way. But man, covers? Oh, yeah. All right, so 888-876-5593. We'll get back to John in Covington, who we rudely interrupted, in moments. So we got Paul in Iroquois County. And room for you too on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, there it is. That's the original, the Evergreen Blues, Midnight Confessions on Mercury. Yeah, so it was within a year, less than a year, probably 4 or 5 months, that Grassroots came out with it, and of course it became a hit. Now, lots of people have done other people's songs. That does not make it a cover. What? Because John came in here and said, everybody's covering records from 1910. I said, well, not exactly. Cover is a time proximity, and usually it's another version of a record that is being released, imminently or has been released recently. And you see this all the time. Chess did a number of things, and especially to Fortune Records, and on and on. Barry Gordy did that a few times, some classic times, to Fortune as well, a little Detroit label. But in any event, it's the time proximity, and not by any means limited to anything racial whatsoever. It's just, I hear a hit, and my label's going to have it. So, again, once the recording has been recorded by any one person, anyone else is able to do it. And so, yeah, but it wouldn't be a cover if somebody, you know, like when I would not say in the classic sense that all those Linda Ronstadt records that were popular originally by Smokey Robinson or whatever, not a cover in the classic sense. You know, it was just a later version of it. And so, and people very often will say, oh, that's a cover of, but not in the classic sense of the definition. So 888-876-5593. And we were talking with John in Covington. We're also going to get to Jeff in New York City, looking forward to that. But poor John, I just cut him off, and we're going to talk about WBAI. Yes, Friends Of. All right, so what about him?
No harm done. I just wanted to say, like I say, I find myself listening to WBAI because it's kind of off the wall. And it's like, for example, they had a woman on there. It used to make me mad. I used to get all upset promoting socialism and communism. Now it's like I said to myself, why get all upset? So now I just sit back and laugh because it's never going to happen. So I just, anyway, back in 1972, I was a freshman in high school, and I read this book, and it was called Playing in the FM Band. Are you familiar with that one?
I don't think so. Who wrote it?
That I can't remember. 1972 was the. Anyway, it was about this guy trying to get into radio, and he tried WBAI, and there was like a waiting list of volunteers, you know.
Okay, I looked it up, by the way. I found the book, Viking Press, Playing in the FM Band, A Personal Account of Free Radio. And yeah, it's still available on Amazon, and a guy named Steve Post wrote it.
Okay. Anyway, I have this uncle, and he teaches, well, he used to teach at Fordham University,
mm-hmm.
PhD psychology. Anyway, mm-hmm. he would spend the summers with us. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't teach in the summer. He used to spend the summers with us, and he found out what I was reading, and he says, oh, let me read that. And so we read it together. Mm-hmm. He read it aloud to me.
Okay.
It was quite a kick. Here's his PhD. Anyway,
yeah.
So he was telling me about the summer of 69. Mm-hmm. They had a fundraiser, like a radiothon.
Well, they became non-commercial in 1960 when the station was donated to the Pacifica Foundation. So absolutely. And back then, that's why I say Friends of BAI. That's what the group
was
called.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, right, exactly. But it's Pacifica Foundation. So sure, they would do fundraisers all the time.
Anyway, he was saying in 69... he was walking about Bronx, New York, mm-hmm. and that's where Fordham is. Anyway, he came across him and spent some time with him and put in a $20 bill. They mm-hmm. had big aquariums, like three big aquariums, empty, mm-hmm. of course, of mm-hmm. fish, but for the sole purpose of putting money in.
Right.
Anyway, so who shows up but John and Yoko?
Okay.
And... oh, this is awful. But my uncle, my uncle doesn't lie. Anyway, he said Yoko was wearing a skirt and she took her panties off and they auctioned off Yoko's panties. Now, who the hell would want those on a hot August day?
Oh, I guarantee you it would create not only some donations, but also you remember it to this day. So it would be a tremendously effective. But yeah, around that time they had some fundraiser where they read War and Peace for like 5 days, cover to cover.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's typical for them, yes. And of course...
Yeah, so they... also, my uncle said, I think Yoko's panties brought like $1.35 or something.
Well, I'll bet you they brought millions of dollars in publicity.
Oh, no doubt, yeah. No doubt. Because I still remember, like,
sure, right, exactly. And then, of course, a few years after that, that's when they broadcast George Carlin's 7 words you can never say on television, and that wound up being a Supreme Court decision, which ultimately went against Pacifica.
Well, and so anyway, there was another one about that. We discussed it. Remember? Anyway, so they're saying now it's they have a transmitter on Times Square,
mm-hmm.
and it costs $17,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so if it costs $17,000 a month, who did they make that check out? Is that the FCC?
No. Who owns the tower site?
Oh,
that's tower rent. That's space. That's probably that would be considered to be a rooftop space.
And, I see.
So if it's on the Empire State Building, then who owns the Empire State Building? You know, I mean, it's sort of like that. But unfortunately, BAI has been in financial trouble for quite a while. And there were sales, too, as far as it had been at the Empire State Building, that tower. I don't know.
I had heard that, and that was $50,000,
well,
I think they said.
Whatever, it was there. But then there were other people involved, and there was a bankruptcy, there were court judgments, there was, I think that there was a settlement a couple of years ago that released BAI from the obligation to the Empire State Building for tower space. And so at that point, they were broadcasting from Times Square. And beyond that, I don't know. Then Pacifica said, we're just going to shut down WBAI, their local operations. Remember, they were going to close the New York studios, and then it would just come out of Pacifica in California. And, of course, you know, people kind of went crazy about that. The BAI staffers filed a lawsuit challenging the shutdown, saying it's illegal. And the court said, oh, you got to go ahead and not dismantle your studios. There's an injunction, and there were appeals. And Pacifica said, we can fire the people. And the court said, not yet. And on that list went on. And ultimately, I think that Pacifica was ordered to return control of the station to the locals. Now, what that meant, I can't begin to tell you because I never looked at that, but they have had tremendous financial trouble, and at this point, I wouldn't be surprised that they're saying, hey, our fundraiser is for us to stay on the air. We need a tower.
Yeah. Back in 69, my uncle said, they said nothing, and I mean nothing, but Kate Smith music until we get another $10,000.
Oh, yeah, they would do all that stuff. For a while, they refused to stop playing Society's Child, you know, the Janis Ian record. I mean, there were all sorts of things that they did. But the station originally was on in the 40s before the FM dial was even where it is now. And ultimately, it went off the air, and it came back in the 50s when Broadcast Associates Incorporated had it, and that's why the call letters are WBAI. It stands for Broadcast Associates Incorporated. Anyway, Louis Schweitzer bought it in 1960 and immediately donated it to the Pacifica Foundation. And the first thing the Pacifica Foundation was applied to go from commercial to non-commercial because it had been a commercial station. And so, you know, it was very eclectic. It wasn't what it later became in terms of, like you say, very, very quote-unquote left-wing, if you will. Originally, it was everything. Ayn Rand had a show on WBAI, you know, for instance. So it was just about everything. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. I think I've blown the break, and I think I'm probably not even on the air.
Down. down in Jamaica, they got lots of pretty women. Steal your money, then they break your heart. Lonesome Sue, she's in love with old Sam. Take him from the fire into the frying pan, on and on. He just keeps on trying, and he smiles and he feels like crying. On and on, on and on, on and on. Lonesome Jimmy sits alone in the moonlight, saw his woman kiss another man. So he takes a ladder, take the stars from the sky, put on Sinatra and he starts to cry on and on. He just sits there trying, and he smiles and he feels like dying.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, thinking of cover records, that is absolutely a classic definition of a cover record. And it was not a hit. But the original was Stephen Bishop, of course, who wrote it. And right when Stephen Bishop released it, well, here comes Kenny Rankin in 1977 and put it on an album. And yeah, I remember I was a music director in North Carolina at the time, and I picked the Kenny Rankin version, of course, so you knew it was going to die. But Stephen Bishop, nonetheless, had the hit and the writer's royalties and all that kind of stuff. But Kenny Rankin, I thought, did a lovely job with that. All right, so back to wonderful WBAI, whether we want to be or not, and John. So yes, you know, I think, by the way, I think they've been on their fundraisers having trouble with where they're located or what they're doing at least since the mid 70s. Whether they're losing locations or tower sites or whatever, that's sort of the hallmark for BAI.
Yeah, well, I was kind of going to ask for your approval or what you thought, and so, but it's like, well, I'm a grown man. I can make my own decisions. I think, you know, I'm not wealthy, but at the same time, I'm not hurting either. So I think I'm going to send them a money order for a little something.
Well, here's the deal on that. Obviously, listener-supported is the most democratic possible process. If it's something you like to listen to and it's something you want to have on the air, absolutely support them. So I would never try to make that decision for anybody else, because the beauty of listener-supported radio is it's just that. Now, of course, in some cases, it's also you get a lot of corporate donations and you get a lot of political leanings, but and that's a shame but true. But in the pure sense, if it's something you enjoy, absolutely support it.
Yeah, well, I hope you take this for the compliment that it's meant to be, but you're so smart, and it's like I really do respect your opinion on things. So, yeah, but then again, like I say, hey, you know, while I was on hold, it's like, I don't need her approval.
No,
I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Absolutely. Anyway. You know, and as far as if I knew something about it, for instance, like if I knew the funds were going to be improperly used, well, I'd tell you that. And I don't. But assuming that it's not a scam and you're not being taken, other than that, I don't think there's anything better or anything more personal than you supporting with your dollars something you enjoy. So if you like it, go for it.
I appreciate it, Raleigh. I got one more thing to ask you, please.
Yeah.
Is would you? Sunday is going to be my wife and I's 40th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations!
Well, thank you. Anyway, the first song is for at the wedding. It's all the reception. It's always for the couple.
Yeah,
and it's usually a slow one.
Yeah.
Well, we want people to have a really good time and get that message across. So. After about 2 minutes of this song, I told the disc jockey, invite everybody else, you know, at 2 minutes into the song. Anyway, it's Rubber Band Man.
Okay, the Spinners, of course.
Yeah, for that reason.
I'll be happy to play that. In fact, a couple things of note regarding the Spinners this week. Bobby Smith lead singer, would have turned 87 Monday. And
I love the Spinners.
Yeah.
And, I have a regret that I never did see them, but yeah.
Well, no, they're terrific, and you know, a number of things. I thought their first big hit on VIP, It's a Shame, was the best thing they ever did. But
yeah.
But yeah. So and then we discovered that Henry, the last remaining Spinner, retired Monday. So sure, we'll play Rubber Band Man for you.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. So 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And what is that doing? Jeff is a second-time caller, if he's still with us. I hope so. So, Jeff, are you there?
No, yes. Mostly here. Sure.
Yes, yes, absolutely. There you are. Yeah. You're living and breathing and all that. I'm glad you called WGN. What's up?
Yeah, well, that Kenny Rankin... the great late Kenny Rankin, I saw him perform here, a new magical voice he had. And speaking of covers, he was so great at doing his versions of many classics.
Oh, yeah, and those weren't covers, that, you know, obviously, but on and on, time-wise, that was an absolute cover. Stephen Bishop comes out, here's Kenny Rankin a week later.
Oh, yeah, he was so great, but I think smoking did him in.
Yeah, but I agree. He was wonderful. So many, his version of Peaceful, just great stuff.
Oh, yes, yep. Oh, and some Beatles songs. Oh, yeah, great, great voice. Yeah. And that caller that was saying something about Don McLean, I actually worked doing A&R and national promotion at Jimmy Einer's record label here in New York City, Millennium Records.
Yeah.
We had a big hit with Don McLean in 1981 doing his version of a Roy Orbison classic, Crying.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
absolutely,
yeah, so,
that's true. So, yeah.
Yeah, Don had... Yeah, that was a big hit for us. And what else did I want to mention? Oh, someone was mentioning about that book by Steve Post playing in the FM band. Steve was a cutting-edge... radio host on WBAI here
right,
in New York City.
Right, yeah.
And he later became the station manager for the first radio station I worked for, WCWP, a college radio station at CW Post, Long Island University.
Yeah.
And if you do a Google search, you'll see an article from December 1st, 1970, when Steve was thrown off of the air at WCWP because of some obscenities. So if you do a Google search, you'll see a New York Times article about Steve Post at WCWP Radio and his problems there.
Oh, I'm going to check that out. Yeah, so Millennium, were you there from the start?
Millennium, right after Star Wars.
Oh, okay, so the Miko record. Yeah, that would have been summer of 77, sure. So you were...
I was doing commercial radio in Texas at a freeform station in... Corpus Christi, KNCN, which was named after WNCN, the classical station out of New York City. And then I came back to New York, and I was a big fan of Jimmy Einer and the records that he produced at the time, the Raspberries and Lighthouse and so forth. So, yeah, I worked there, and we had a big hit with Crying. And then a few years later, one of the acts that we had on Millennium that I was instrumental in signing, Frankie Previtt, went on to win an Academy Award for writing those hit songs in Dirty Dancing.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, and a number of people wound up on Millennium. You know, Tommy James was on Millennium for a while.
That's right.
And,
Three times in Rough.
Yeah, exactly. Sammy Turner was a Millennium act. I'm trying to think who else. Jay Black.
Hey, you know your stuff. That's
yeah, Jay Black was on Millennium
Black,
for a while.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I remember this.
And actually, someone that I was a big fan of in college radio, he was really big in Canada, Bruce Colburn.
Uh-huh.
Of Canada, he won a bunch of Juno awards.
Yeah, absolutely. Bruce Cockburn, I think it was, actually. But Wondering Where...
Well, that's how you pronounce it. It's spelled C-O-C-K.
Yeah, it is, and it's Colburn? Okay. Wow, yeah, Wondering Where the Lions Are. And see, I never knew how to pronounce his name, but I remember Wondering Where the Lions Are.
Yeah, I was involved in the signing of that. That was a top 20 hit, and we actually got him to perform on Saturday Night Live that year, May of 1980. Yeah.
Doing things like Rumors of Glory and Tokyo Later, yeah.
Oh, you know your stuff. That's right. I was involved in the promotion of those records.
Wow. So what'd you do after that?
I started a talent agency representing radio, New York City radio talent from voiceovers, and then I got involved in commercial radio here in New York City, Radio Free New York. I'll send you an article that's going to be coming out in a few weeks about the history of Radio Free New York and how we got in the face of Howard Stern. I could tell you sometime an amazing story of what we did to get in the face of Howard Stern and our counter-programming techniques. It was an amazing time in New York radio, and Howard didn't like us, but he was instrumental in giving us free publicity.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, when you can do that, that's golden. When you can get the guy who's got all the audience to say something about you, man, that's worth everything. And it's
no doubt about it. I mean,
right.
When we were on the air, we would say, hey, Howard Stern's in a 20-minute break right now. So why don't you come over to us, listen to us, then you can go back to Howard. Yeah. Oh, I want to begin to tell you the things we did, crashing his press conference that he had at E! Television Network. And
if he was smart, he would have ignored it completely. And
And Mel Karmazin had to go to Howard saying, Howard,
stop talking
about Radio Free New York, because every time you do, you're helping their cause.
Well, of course. And it's like in Tampa when the Power Pig signed on. And, you know, you had a radio station there that had been number one, Q105, forever and ever and ever. And they fell for it. They started talking about the Power Pig. And it was like manna from heaven. You know, the guy who's on top needs to have the ability to ignore. But Howard, in that case, and it's funny that he would not learn that lesson, because he did that when he won in Philadelphia. He absolutely went after John DiBella, who was against him on MMR. And DiBella had fallen for it and just, you know, basically gave Howard his audience by responding. So, yeah, Frankie and the Knockouts, whatever happened to them?
Well, that was it. Frankie Previtt, who's my longtime friend.
Yeah, so what's he doing
now? He got dropped by Millennium. Well, he was the one that wrote the songs I've Had the Time of My Life and Hungry Eyes.
Right. Well, that's great. Yeah, and then the last record I know on Millennium, and there may be more since then, but I think was Chilliwack.
Chilliwack, that's right, out of Canada. That's right. Gone.
Yeah.
That, and but I could tell you the quick story of, because you mentioned John DiBella. What happened was, since John was in Philly and Howard was on a competing station there in Philly, Howard decided to bring, when John DiBella was getting divorced from Annette DiBella.
Oh, I know.
Howard was able to lure Annette DiBella on dial a date on Howard's show.
This is really bad.
Humiliated, embarrassed.
She went
DiBella on the air.
Yeah,
and
except
shortly thereafter,
she killed
Annette
herself.
DiBella committed suicide.
Right, I know. I'm well
so
aware of that.
There was a press conference that Howard had to introduce his new E! Television Network show. And we crashed the press conference at the Plaza Hotel. And someone that worked very closely with Howard went up to the microphone to ask Howard a question. And the question that he asked in front of all the media in New York City was, Howard, do you take any responsibility for the death of Annette DiBella?
What did he say?
And with that, Howard went ballistic. And he started, he went crazy saying, you're a loser. How can you say that? You know. It was amazing.
God.
I have some video footage of the press conference I could send you at some point.
Yeah, I remember that so well in Philadelphia. It was just a horrible story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, I don't know him personally, but I was radio editor for Billboard for several years, and that's when Howard was first coming up. And I got to say, the only times I had ever talked to him, he was the most respectful, deferential, decent guy I'd heard from in a long time. And he was on RIF in Detroit at the time, and I think he was putting out 50 Ways to Rank Your Mother and the album. And I just thought he was a pleasure to hear from. It was completely not the act you'd hear on the radio.
Yeah, well, that act that he did on the radio was that other side of Howard that was quite abusive and evil. And,
I don't doubt it for a world. Like I say, I never had to see that. But the Annette suicide was just crushing. I remember that so well.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so some great radio stories. So what was that station that you said, was it down in Florida where you said they were doing some counter-programming?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, what it was there was a station there, WRBQ, Q105, that was number one in every demo in the world, top 40. I mean, it was literally number 112 to death. They owned it. And here came J-Core at the time, and they took WFLA, I guess it was FLA-FM, and turned it into the Power Pig. And I remember this so well because the guy who was president of J-Core at the time was Terry Jacobs, and I was talking to him at the NAB in Las Vegas before this was happening, along with the guy who was in charge of all his programming and stuff, Randy Michaels. And, you know, Terry was like, well, if we do this, you know, we may get all the teens, but what do we have? I said, oh, no, you'll get everybody. And, you know, he said, well, how can that be? I said, because you've got some people on Q105 who, when you when you rattle their cages, they're going to respond. And when they respond, they're going to give you enough publicity that you're going to win. And I remember Terry said, well, no, that's not going to happen. They're smart enough not to. And I remember Randy actually was like, I don't know, they may. But it's exactly what happened. And the guy who was programming Q105 at the time was a guy named Randy Kabrick. And Kabrick absolutely knew that this was the play, and he went to the general manager and everybody else and said, we cannot respond. Well, of course, they pretty much ignored everything he said, and it was a couple people. Mason Dixon was one of them, and I think the other was Cleveland Wheeler, I'm not sure, but in any event, they just completely fell for it, and basically they became the Power Pig's promotion arm, and the Power Pig won because Q105 gave them the audience. And Q105 is the station where Scott Shannon was working before he went to New York when Mallright bought the Jersey station. That became Z100.
Right.
Yeah, so...
Right, Z100.
Yeah, and so he had that morning zoo stuff he was doing on Q105.
So that was the deal. Kind of programming can work, but in today's lame world of commercial radio, you're not going to really hear too much about counter-programming. The only kind of programming I know is during the Super Bowl when you have the Puppy Bowl.
And I actually like the Puppy Bowl. No, it's horrifying, and that's. I hope you'll call me back. We can talk about that on another night, because that is just what's going on today. When they talk about FM going out of cars, AM going out of cars, I say to myself, well, it's a hard argument when you hear what's on it. And, you know, WGN, a rare exception to that. And so, radio's doing it to themselves. Call me again. Thank you.
Great. Well, hey, Raleigh, have a good night.
You too.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
So, yeah, Millennium. Quite the label for a minute there. 888-876-5593. We'll get to Paul, we'll get to Donna, we'll get to Chuck, we'll get to James, and hopefully there'll be a moment for you too, if not tomorrow night, right after the game, right here on WGN Radio.
I've ordered some rain for tomorrow. The sky will be sunny but wet. And out of nowhere you're suddenly there. And I say, pardon me, haven't we met? I've ordered some sunshine with showers. And I've got my scenery set. Right there with a thumb, our umbrella's gonna bump. And I'll say, pardon me, haven't we met? Accidents can happen, and into one I'm gonna slide. There's a good chance in finding romance when two hearts collide. Just how it happened when Romeo met Juliet. Somewhere I've read Romeo said, hey baby, pardon me, haven't we met?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, my favorite Kenny Rankin record, actually, and he wrote it, didn't record it originally, a year before he put it out. Carmen McRae had the original on that in March of 65, and then Mel Torme in August of 65 recorded it, and then a year later, in November of 66, Kenny recorded it, and since then, oh gosh, a few dozen other people, but I thought it was a terrific record, indeed. So, yeah, just trying to think, well, and it was hard, too, because String Man was another one that was a contender for me, but I thought, ultimately, if I had to pick one, it would it'd be Haven't We Met. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, let's see if Paul in Iroquois County is still with us. He's still alive, Paul? Paul, have you left us? He did. I wouldn't blame him. It's been 2 hours. I'm sorry, Paul. Tomorrow night after the hockey game. So we should be on about an hour late, but that should be about 11 Central, and I'll be happy to talk to you, and I promise I won't make you wait forever. Donna in Oaklawn. How's it going, Donna?
Oh, really well. You were talking about covers, and Dolly Parton wrote a song. It was recorded by Whitney Houston first, and then they put it into a movie for The Bodyguard. I have a sneaking suspicion Dolly Parton made a bucket load of money.
Sure she did.
Just on having Whitney Houston perform the song.
Sure.
I Will Always Love You.
Right, it's not a
However,
cover.
However, a little while later, she started singing it for her country audience, and a whole bunch of country people got up in arms because Dolly Parton was singing Whitney Houston's song.
Yeah, It's not a cover, again, by virtue of the time frame. And Dolly Parton did release that record in 1974 as a single on RCA. It's on the Jolene album.
Yeah, okay.
So it's way before Whitney Houston.
Well, did she collect... Well, sure,
she wrote it. So as the writer, she gets the writer royalties for that, of course. But that wouldn't be a cover because that was years and years later. I mean, it certainly was a re-recording of the song. You could call it a cover loosely, but you wouldn't consider it a cover from the standpoint of it being contemporaneous. And when I hear cover, I always think contemporaneous, like Dolly has it and then Whitney put it out on top of her. Not true. Years and years and years separated those two. But Dolly did have it in 74, and it was a hit. Now here we go, 8 years later, it's part of the soundtrack of the movie, but yeah, that was a pretty big record for her on RCA, and Jolene of course was a big album.
Gotcha.
So yeah, that was a hit.
I stand corrected.
Well,
you have a phenomenal musical grasp. Thank you making that clear.
Yeah, I've got the country charts. It's all across the room, but I'll look that up later and see how high it got. But yeah, that was her in 74.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful, wonderful Wednesday and a better Thursday.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was a RCA in 74. In fact, it was a pressed at their Indianapolis plant. Not that it matters, but it was. And the flip side was a Porter Wagoner song. So, and John's going to hand me the country books, maybe. No, to your, go the other direction. Yes, there you go. And I'll look it up. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So, yes, John is walking without the walker, which is amazing. And we are thrilled about that. Yay. All right, so let's look this. They just handed me the book. So let's look this up here. Pardon. I know it's here. Let's see. Here we are, Dolly. Now that's Stella. Yeah. Her sister. I always liked Stella, actually. So let's see. I Will Always Love You in 1974 got to number one for Dolly Parton. Number one. All right. And also was got a Grammy of some sort. So, yeah. And then, of course, I think they probably re-released it later. But in the original one, number one. So if you're saying country fans didn't know it was her, well, then they weren't alive in 1974 because it was number one. All right, so now you know. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And again, that Jolene album was a hit all the way around. So let's see, what do we have? Michael, and I don't know where Michael is. He's driving the highways and byways. Where are you, Michael?
I'm on 80 heading towards Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Oh, all right. All right. So a good deal.
And, the weather's fair. No complaints.
Yay. All right. All right, so
amazing. how the transitions, you know, occur. I mean, Sunday it's supposed to be 50 degrees again in Chicago.
Oh,
82
wow.
today.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Be prepared for anything.
So are you going to stop at Iowa 80 and Walcott?
Well, I have once, and that's about enough.
That's enough?
Oh, yeah. Enough. It's like Disney World. Disney World, once is enough.
All right. Yeah, the world's largest truck stop. Yeah, they're going to have...
I know.
Yeah, they're going to have the Truckers Jamboree again, and yeah. So that's...
I've got too many other things to do, but I tend to stop at Sapp Brothers, and there's only one in Illinois, and I just finished up there. It's that Plank Road.
Okay.
An old-fashioned chain.
Yeah.
In the... like Midwest, Nebraska,
uh-huh.
and West. And, but they have kind of a homespun aura about that, you know?
Uh-huh.
Trying to support the smaller companies, you know, that are still family-operated.
Absolutely.
But I want to bring up the ubiquitous curmudgeon, the ionosphere, which you educated me on last time, and I had mentioned that I got a lot more reception on AM radio up in Wisconsin. And,
yeah.
you know, Milwaukee's a city, Chicago.
Yeah.
So the getting was incessant in the background, and, you know, after about an hour or two,
yeah.
Persevering, listening to your show, it gets on your nerves. So I was thinking, then, why would I buy a fancy radio if the ionosphere is something out of our control?
Well, that's, you know, again, it's up to you and what you're trying to achieve. For many of us, that fading in and out of DXing doesn't get on our nerves. We just love it. But if,
okay.
if you're saying that drives me crazy, you got two choices. One is if it's content you want to hear, you can stream it because almost every station streams. So now,
right.
while you're on the road, obviously, for better or worse, broadband in most places is okay. But when you're in the middle of nowhere, there is no broadband. So that's,
yes.
you know, and that's just the way that is. But as long as you're mostly traversing an area with broadband, stream it. And you can easily,
yes.
very, very cheaply, if you don't have something in Dash,
yes.
you can easily get it on your car speakers anyway.
Right.
So
there you go.
That's the way to get it.
Yes. And I do enjoy the imperfections of AM radio. You know, I like that.
Yeah.
The fact that you have to struggle and put effort into it. You know, and I think the content is way above what you get on FM.
Well, and you know, part of that is probably because, for the most part, most stations, AM is not a real financial center for the owners. And so, therefore,
yes.
they're willing to take some chances. And, you know, you get yeah. some stations like a WGN where, of course, it's a lot of revenue and they don't take any chances, but they do everything local and live
yes.
and, you know, like that. But for most of these stations, you know, it's an afterthought at best. And whenever something's worthless, that's when creativity really starts to creep in.
Darn right. Where there's desperation,
yeah,
you know, it fosters innovation, as they say.
Well, that's it. Everybody who talks about, like, the folks who started Top 40 Radio and what visionaries they were, I'm like, wait a minute. When there's nothing left to lose, when you pay $25,000 for the whole station, you can try anything.
That's right. And that sounds like fun to me.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly, because there's
After
nothing
a while,
online.
The Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I say there's nothing online. You don't have to don't have to satisfy four bankers. You do whatever the hell
right.
you want. Yeah.
I was going to say something similar. You know, after a while, it gets so big that accountants and lawyers run the station.
Well,
and the people with the ideas and the energy and chutzpah, they get pushed into a corner.
Well,
you know,
and what's
metaphorically speaking,
you're 100% right. But what's happened now is a step beyond that. It's gotten to the point where just surviving for some of these groups, what they paid for
sure.
these stations, it's I don't know what's going to happen. The only reason that they don't lose them is there's nobody standing in the way to say I'll
yeah.
take them. Nobody wants to take on the debt service.
What about a cooperative?
Well, what about a cooperative?
Pooling them, you know,
well,
pooling
yeah,
them,
pooling
these small
here,
stations.
Right, but here's the problem. Well, in this case, they're not small stations, but, you know,
okay.
you take a chain like Clear Channel, which is now iHeart. they so overpaid for those radio stations that there's no way that they could walk away. They're never going to sell them to anybody, no matter who they are, for nearly what they paid. A cooperative would be out of their mind to pay the prices that they did. The money that a cooperative would offer wouldn't begin to satisfy the dollars that they have in it. So that's why they do what they do. And of course, when you're talking about that level of debt, it comes in many different forms. And, you know, they're constantly rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. But ultimately, the only way that in the future down the road, somebody's going to take it, you know, in the shorts big time for what will happen. Because right now, I would contend that an iHeart could be at top dollar, sold out 100%, and they still won't satisfy the debt service.
Wow.
See that, and they're not alone, and so it's upside down. So I think the only way that that anything will come out of the ashes, if we get to the ashes, and right now, you know, a lot of these lenders, especially the lenders that are further down the chain, you know, the mezzanine financiers and the primary lenders, they're going to get their money back. But when you start getting into subordinated debentures and junk bonds, if you will, those people don't want to call that because they won't get a dime. So many of them have been willing to take equity, oh my God, instead of debt, you know, because they don't want to lose it all. So,
of course.
You know, but nobody in the right mind, cooperative or otherwise, would come up and pay the kind of prices for the debt they've got in it.
Sure. It's just a morass of paper.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And, you know, I blame the government 100% for this, because when the 94 Telecommunications Act came out, what they basically said is, we're going to eviscerate musical chairs here. We're not going to have any more stations, but now you can own half of them. And so, of course, people immediately overnight had to become a buyer or a seller. And, you know, initially it looked really good, because when you buy a bunch of stations, initially you're going to look so good to the lenders, because, of course, there's two ways to make money. One is, of course, to increase your revenue. The other is to decrease your expenses. And the economy of scale, you can take, like you're saying, what if a bunch of stations are together? That's right. You can take a bunch of stations, and now you don't need 30 traffic directors. You need one, things like that. And so the first couple of years, because of all the cost savings, you look golden, but eventually you gotta operate them, and that's where they're in trouble.
I see. Well, I think there's a lot of options there if they want to put their pride on the shelf.
Well,
and be a bit humble.
It's not
think
pride.
About how to make this survive, you know?
It's not pride. It's money. And see, that's the thing. All they're thinking about is, how do we pay that, you know, because on the things that are still debentures, the things that are still bonds, they have a schedule of payments. You have to meet those payments. And if you don't, bad things happen to you. It's codified. It's written.
Right.
So, okay, if you're that company, you can't think outside the box and say, I'm going to spend money doing this. You're thinking, how am I coming up with these dollars? And that, so we're no longer at pride. We're no longer at greed. We're at desperation on a level of, you know, how do I, you know, take two and two and come up with 22, because I need to in a hurry.
Well, what I'm thinking about is economies of scale. And in theory, you tell me if I'm wrong, because I don't understand the industry, but if I consolidated a lot of stations, first of all, if the government would allow it, they wouldn't see it as collusion or antitrust, you know, laws being violated, you could actually consolidate the power of the stations collectively and think about, is that something to sell?
Well,
you know,
no.
You might be the only kid in town with that kind of power, because you consolidated all these stations.
Well, no, they're all consolidated pretty much. That's we've already gotten
to that. In terms
to
of the broadcasting power is what I'm talking
about. Oh, you mean, you know? What, you mean in terms of wattage?
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's what I'm saying. When the commission said you can own half of them, basically, they said, and they stay on the frequencies they're on and the powers they're on. No, we're not going to, and you couldn't do it anyway. And you got to understand how things propagate. It's not as simple as you would think. When you're talking about an FM station, for instance, you not only have to think, let's say you're at 99.1, you not only have to think about what's going on at 99.1, one, but you're going to have, with co-channel interference, but you're going to have to look at 99.3, 5, and 7 in that direction, and 98.9, 7, because you're going to do that. And the FCC has absolute rules of how far you have to be from another station on.
I see.
And if you're not, it's called short spacing. And, oh, man, to get in there short spaced, well, that's why you have so much directional FM and things like that. You can, but it's not the best way. But, no, you're not going to get them to increase the power.
Okay. On another note, yeah. I know that you're into the headlines and the papers and the magazines.
Oh, yes, slime from the checkout line. Yes, I've got them right, well, in front of me.
You know, I want to give you some facts here. I have dual citizenship, British and American, right? So I was with the forces in the UK as well.
Oh, yeah, you know, and Fleet Street.
And I just wanted to say that with the fact that we have a new king coming next month, that Prince Harry hopefully will not disgrace the family anymore, and I think he's done the right thing by leaving his wife at home. You know, who would drag their family through the mud like that?
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing the royal family keeps on giving and giving is to Fleet Street and to Palm Beach. The tabloids are just in hog heaven.
Well, you know, they're royals, but they're human beings, aren't they, Robbie?
Well,
they've all got their misgivings and frailties and weaknesses, just like the rest of us.
Well, of course, of course. Yeah. And of course, they're not really in a position where they're going to counter what's written as well, so they just have to take whatever's dished out. No,
That's right. They take it on the chin.
Yeah, it's not easy. That's for sure. I would not have made it. I know that.
Well, I think it's a very tough job. You know,
oh, it
in
is.
The long run.
It is.
Know, it's
and
like business travel. People think, oh, it's so glamorous. It's not.
No.
You're in and out of hotels, and business travel is strenuous.
No, I used to say that hotels should have been mandated to spray paint the area code on the ceiling so you know where you were at 2 in the morning. The problem now is I don't know the new area codes. I look up 423. I'm like, where the hell is that? Yeah,
exactly.
Chattanooga. But, yeah, exactly. All right. Well,
mine changed, too, in my hometown, too.
Yeah.
Up in Indiana.
Oh,
good talking to you, Raleigh.
Call me again. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Will do. Bye-bye.
And that's where we'll pick it up on the waning moments of WGN Radio.